Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for September 2018. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr LLP in Toronto, Canada. Today we're going to talk about the June 2018 Supreme Court of the United States decision in Western GECO versus ION Geophysical. In it, the Supreme Court decided that an American patent owner, Western GECO, could collect lost profits damages from the U.S. defendant ION Geophysical caused by the use of equipment outside the United States by ION Geophysical's customers. My guests today are Linda Wadler and Alyssa Lipton, who are both partners at the U.S. intellectual property law firm Finnegan in its Washington, D.C. and Boston offices, respectively. Linda focuses her practice primarily on contentious patent proceedings and related counseling for clients in the pharmaceutical, biotechnology, medical device, and cosmetic industries. She has extensive experience representing brand-name pharmaceutical patent holders in Hatch-Waxman litigation on commercially successful pharmaceutical products. Alyssa's practice focuses on patent litigation and pre-litigation counseling involving a wide range of technologies, including biotechnology, pharmaceutical, and medical device patents. She has experience representing clients before U.S. district courts in all stages of litigation, from pre-suit investigation through appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. This presentation is solely for educational purposes to contribute to the understanding of U.S. intellectual property law. This podcast reflects only the personal views of the speakers and not Finnegan, Breskin & Parr, or their clients, and does not constitute individualized legal advice. It is understood that each case is fact-specific and that the appropriate solution in any case will vary. I spoke with Linda and Alyssa from their respective offices in Washington, D.C. and Boston. Hello, Linda. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, Don.
Hi, Don.
So can you tell me, what were the facts of this case?
Well, Don, the facts here were somewhat unusual. Western GECO owned four patents. They related to a system that's towed behind a ship, and it's used to survey the ocean floor. The system used positioning devices that control the relative locations of numerous sensors to each other, and the sensors also could detect changes in the ocean floor over time. So, as a result, the patented system produced a higher quality data than previous survey systems. Some of the unusual facts are that although Western GECO manufactured a commercial embodiment of patented invention, and they sold survey services that used the patented technology to overseas oil and gas companies, Western GECO did not sell the patented system itself. The infringer, ION Geophysical, manufactured components of the patented system in the United States, and then they sold those unassembled components to companies abroad. So ION's overseas customers then first combined the components to create a surveying system that met each element of Western GECO's asserted U.S. patent claims. And then the customers used that assembled system to provide survey services in competition with Western GECO outside of the United States.
So could you explain what the U.S. Patent Act says about exporting kits or parts or important components of a patented invention?
Well, Don, Section 271F of the patent statute, which is Title 35, expands the definition of infringement to include supplying in or from the U.S. patented inventions unassembled components. And 271F has two sections, F1 and F2. For those familiar with the concept of inducement of infringement in the U.S. law, Section 271F1 is similar to the 271B inducement statute. Under 271F1, there can be infringement of a patent if one supplies from the U.S. either all or a substantial portion of uncombined components of a patented invention and actively induces combination of those components outside of the U.S. in a way that would infringe the patent if the combination had occurred inside the U.S. It's important to note that the U.S. Congress didn't make the foreign combination itself an act of infringement. Instead, the statute is directed to supplying components from the U.S. with an active inducement or intent to combine those components into the patented invention outside of the U.S. For those of you familiar with the concept of contributory infringement, Section 271F2 has some similarities to the 271C contributory infringement statute. 271F2 provides that there can be infringement of the U.S. patent if one supplies from the U.S. any uncombined component of a patented invention that's especially made or adapted for use in the invention, is not a staple article suitable for substantial non-infringing use, where the supplier knows that the component is made or adapted for use in the invention and also intends that the component will be combined outside of the U.S. in a manner that would infringe if the combination had occurred inside the U.S.
So here we're talking about damages resulting from things that occur offshore. What kind of damages are recoverable for infringement of a U.S. patent?
Well, I'll answer that question, Don. The United States Patent Act's general damages provision is Section 284, and that's broadly worded. It states, upon finding for the claimant, the court shall award the claimant damages adequate to compensate for the infringement, but in no event less than a reasonable royalty for the use made of the invention by the infringer, together with interests and costs as fixed by the court. So the Section 284 damages provision is broadly worded with the intent to provide full compensation, to make the patent owner whole by returning it to the financial position it would have enjoyed but for the occurrence of the patent infringement.
So what were the damages that were awarded by the jury in this case?
Well, Don, after trial, the jury in the Western GECO case awarded $93.4 million in lost profits, and this was for the service contracts that had been performed abroad by ION's customers. And in addition, the jury awarded $12.5 million in reasonable royalties for supply from the U.S. of the accused components. And it's important to note that that reasonable royalty was for the supply of components that were not used in the services for which the lost profits had been awarded.
Okay, so what happened on appeal to this damage award from the jury?
Well, there were several twists and turns, but in essence, ION appealed the award of lost profits, but not the award of reasonable royalties. So in a divided opinion, the Federal Circuit reversed the district court and held that although ION was liable for infringement under Section 271F2, the Patent Act did not permit Western GECO to recover the $93 million in lost profits for foreign uses of a patented invention. So Western GECO eventually appealed the Federal Circuit's decision to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court then reversed the Federal Circuit. The Supreme Court found that for sections the infringement statute 271F2 and the damages statute 284 do allow a patent owner to recover for lost profits, even when it results from an infringer's customer's use overseas of an invention that is patented in the United States.
So some of us Canadians are well aware of the Research in Motion or BlackBerry case from 10 or 15 years ago. So we're attuned to the extraterritoriality of U.S. Patent laws. Could you explain the law in the USA regarding extraterritoriality of U.S. laws in general?
Sure. In U.S. law, and this is not just limited to the patent laws, there's a presumption against the extraterritorial application of U.S. statutes. And this assumes that federal statutes apply only within the jurisdiction of the United States. And the presumption is premised on the idea that Congress generally legislates with domestic concerns in mind. The presumption is intended to prevent international court from unintended clashes between U.S. laws and the laws of other nations. And courts have applied a two-step framework for the application of this presumption against extraterritoriality. The first question that courts ask is, does the statute itself, the language of the statute, give a clear affirmative indication that it applies outside of the United States? If the presumption has not been rebutted in this way, then you move to the second step of the framework. And here, courts identify the statute's focus, ask whether the conduct relevant to that focus occurs in the United States. If the conduct relevant to the statute's focus does occur in the U.S., then this is considered a permissible domestic application of the statute, even if other conduct occurs abroad. If, on the other hand, the conduct relevant to the statute's focus occurs abroad, outside the U.S., then this is considered an impermissible extraterritorial application, regardless of whether some conduct or other conduct occurs in the U.S.
So how did the Supreme Court work their way through these questions?
Well, Western GECO had argued that the presumption against extraterritoriality should never apply to statutes that provided general damages remedy for unlawful conduct. But the Supreme Court expressly declined to decide that issue because, quote, they said that question could implicate many other statutes besides the Patent Act. So instead, the Supreme Court narrowly focused on the second step of the extraterritoriality framework, identifying the statute's focus and determining whether the conduct relevant to that focus occurred in the United States. So they first looked at the damages statute, and they concluded that the focus of 284 was infringement based upon the statute's language, quote, damages adequate to compensate for the infringement. They then looked at the infringement statute, 271F2, and concluded that that focused on the domestic conduct of supplying components of a patented invention in or from the United States. So the conduct that's relevant to the statutory focus, exporting components from the United States, occurred in the United States. And the court found that the lost profits damages were a permissible domestic application of Section 284. ION obviously argued to the contrary, but the court dismissed those arguments, stating that foreign conduct subsequent to ION's infringement was, quote, merely incidental to the infringement and does not have primacy for the extraterritoriality analysis.
So we'll get to the dissenting opinion in a moment, but damages for foreign use seems to me to be a bit remote for infringement by exporting exporting products or kits or pieces that are assembled offshore. What's the law about the proximate cause, and what did this court have to say about that?
Well, in order to show that a party is entitled to lost profits, the party needs to prove two things. First, the party needs to show causation in fact. In other words, the patentee needs to prove that the infringement in the case the but-for cause of injury. There's no presumption in the law that a patentee would have sold its product or services to those who purchased the infringing article from the accused infringer. And once a party has established but-for causation, the party then needs to establish legal or proximate causation. And what that means is that the party needs to show that the defendant should be legally responsible for the injury. And in determining proximate causation, courts typically ask whether the damage was a reasonably foreseeable consequence of the infringement, whether it was too remote a result. And finally, the patentee must also establish the specific amount of loss to a reasonable degree of certainty. In the Western GECO case, the Supreme Court found that lost foreign profits are permissible under Section 271F2 to place the patent owner in as good a position as she would have been in if the patent had not been infringed. Significantly, however, the court expressly declined to, quote, address the extent to which other doctrines, such as proximate cause, could limit or preclude damages in particular cases.
So the majority decision runs for about 10 pages. The dissent ran for almost as many, for 9 pages. Can you briefly explain the dissenting opinion?
Sure. Justice Gorsuch, who's the newest member of the Supreme Court, wrote the dissenting opinion, and he was joined by one other justice, Justice Breyer. So the dissent agreed that Western Geo's claim for lost profits did not violate the presumption against extraterritoriality. Where they disagreed was that whether the Patent Act permits an award of lost profits for the use of an invention outside of the United States. So the dissent asserted that foreign conduct is not infringement and cannot be a proper basis for awarding compensation. So more specifically, the dissent argued that the infringement statute, 271F2, expands what qualifies as making an invention in the U.S., but does nothing to suggest that U.S. patents protect against, much less guarantee compensation for uses abroad. The dissent also characterized as an anomalous result, or that could happen, is to allow greater recovery when a defendant exports a component of an invention in violation of 271F2 than when a defendant exports the entire invention in violation of a different patent statute, 271A. Finally, the dissent also expressed concern that the United States awards damages to U.S. patent owners for activities in foreign countries. Will foreign countries then award damages to foreign patent owners based upon activity in the United States? So the dissent stated that the majority opinion, quote, invites other countries to use their own patent laws and courts to assert control over the U.S. economy. And principles of comity counsel against an interpretation of patent laws that interfere so dramatically with the rights of other nations to regulate their own economies.
So, Linda, to your last point, Section 271A involves infringement by making, using, or selling the invention. Justice Gorsuch showing the difference in result between the ability to get damages for that. I suppose they didn't explain whether or not you can get damages for use of the invention offshore out of Section 271, but I have seen some commentators say, is this going to drive manufacturing offshore as a result because the components were supplied from the USA?
I think that has to be carefully considered in the context of the specific facts presented in each individual situation. The facts in the Western GECO case were somewhat unusual because there the patent owner did not sell the patented invention, but only provided services overseas using that invention. And the case was also unusual because the accused infringer shipped only unassembled components. One thing that's important to remember is that the Western GECO case didn't change the law on liability for patent infringement. The case was limited solely to damages. It is possible that under circumstances similar to those in the Western GECO case, where there's a risk of significant foreign lost profits as a result of 271F2 infringement, there may be more of a disincentive to manufacture components in the U.S. when those unassembled components will ultimately be shipped outside the U.S.
Linda, what do you think the impact of Western GECO will be moving forward?
Well, the Supreme Court carefully limited its analysis to infringement under Section 271F2. So it signaled that the decision was intended to apply only to damages associated with infringement under that very specific subsection of the Patent Act. Justice Gorsuch's dissent raised hypotheticals that make it appear that at least he was considering whether the outcome in this case decided under 271F2 is consistent with possible results under other sections of the patent liability statute, for example, 271A addressing direct infringement. But those other sections of 271 were, of course, not before the Supreme Court in this case. So as a result, many open questions remain regarding the applicability of the court's holding in particular cases, the extent to which proximate cause might limit damage awards, and whether the dissent's concerns regarding foreign comedy will come to pass.
So more grist for the litigation mill. Linda and Alyssa, thank you very much for these insights.
Thank you, Don, for reaching out to us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
Linda Wadler and Alyssa Lipton are both partners in the U.S. intellectual property law firm Finnegan and its Washington, D.C. and Boston offices, respectively. For further information on the Western GECO decision and a case analysis by Linda Wadler and Alyssa Lipton, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.